All right, man, welcome to Pro 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 684. Jason Lingren is with me, and Fortune de Saint-Germain returns. We are going to be covering quite a topic today. Jason and I have never covered it, and that would be Edgar Cayce. I've never read a full Cayce book, but I have read umpteen excerpts and coverages and direct quotes from him over the years. But the one thing I notice about Cayce is even though he gets lumped into kind of new agey topics, everywhere you read, he's mostly respected. And I think there's a reason for that. Anyhow, welcome, Jason.
And a hot and humid good morning.
Yeah, you think we shot straight up too. We're well over 90 and we're having humidity like crazy, but we got a lot to get through. Welcome, Fortune. And I think you have some announcements to make.
Well, as we always say, welcome from and to the Golden Castle at the end of the world where the rainbow begins. Here we fix all things, including broken hearts. Some nice announcements for everyone. Saturday, the 22nd of August of this year from 1 to 3 in London, we're still doing the Alchemy, the Chakra Healing Conference. Seminar, and we've added a new one. So Saturday, December 12th, from 1 to 3 p.m. in London, we're doing Alchemy for Prosperity and Clairvoyance, and all of the information will be in the episode announcement for everyone, and we look forward to seeing all of you. And as we begin, just to let you know, there are two channels on YouTube, The Conscious Awakening and Awakening to True Reality, where they post with narration a great many of Cayce's works, some combined in one episode. And they're great starting points. So people are starting to translate that into narrated documentaries. And for those of you who might be old enough to remember, we say tonight we are going to have a really big show. Gentlemen, the floor is yours.
Okay, so we will have the information posted in the description. And as always true, you can contact us if you need to ask a question. There is also a contact in the footer of every page. Other than that, we got a lot to get through. Are you ready, Jason?
Let's roll.
Let's roll.
Fortune, what was your initial interest and experience discovering Edgar Cayce and his work as the Sleeping Prophet? And was there anything that initially stood out to you about the man himself?
Anyone who is interested in any lifetime, especially in this current era, would be interested in Cayce. Anyone who's an esotericist or interested in spirituality would definitely be drawn to this man. His humility, his kindness, and his desire to help others. So we say that the heart of God is expressed on earth as we share and care for one another. And the heart of God is expressed in infinite ways among all of us. So the humility of this man and his desire to help others was what brought these talents, as well as some other things that we are going to discuss as we go on.
For those who may be unfamiliar, can you give us a bit of an outline about Edgar Cayce's early life in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, including his strict biblical upbringing and the first manifestations of his unusual gifts as a child?
It was a Christian Spartan upbringing, and he was a very gentle child who had trouble learning. His father was strict and couldn't understand why he viewed Cayce as someone who was slow and did not know how, or maybe even lazy, and did not know how to deal with him because he didn't understand that his son had these talents. But from an early age, he had angelic help and the master's help that were tuning him from an early age. So when he answered to the angelic call and said that his sole desire was to help people, sometimes he went to sleep on the book, and he was able to memorize the information from sleeping on top of the book. So these were when his talents were first coming about. And throughout his early life, the angels and masters attuned his spirit for the work in his later life. But not only did he want to help people during this life, it should be noted that in the life previous, he did have very strong psychic powers as well, which he used to win at gambling and manipulate and make money from. So he agreed when he came back in this lifetime that he would come back with psychic powers, but he would use those powers not for profit, but just to simply help people, humanity, and bring this information out.
I wasn't aware of that. This next question is a bit out of order, but it's one of the excerpts that I had bumped into while I was reading certain things about Casey. So I asked Jason to put it in here just because I found it interesting. So go ahead, Jason.
Edgar Casey spoke about certain souls incarnating at specific times to assist with great changes, spiritual awakening, or earth transitions. There's modern discussion about souls being born roughly in the mid-1950s through the late 1970s as being part of such a group, sometimes called bridge souls or translators. What can you tell us about his actual views on generational soul groups or souls arriving to help during times of major shift?
These were people that were not meant to lead an ordinary life. They were born between two worlds. Therefore, they came to be the bridge between two worlds, the old world and old paradigms and illusions, and the new world that is right now being born in front of our eyes. So they came with spiritual awareness, partially awakened. They came to help and transform. In their deeper consciousness, they knew they came for a reason. And like Casey, they were misunderstood growing up. They felt different. They questioned things. They knew deep down inside there was a purpose. And they came at a time when they were disavowing the society's illusions, the distractions, and the conformity that our old society had impressed or pressured upon people. So they were drawn to the stars and fascinated by the unknown. And this is just scratching the surface. So just for those who would like to go deeper, on the channel on YouTube, The Conscious Awakening, look, the final plan for souls born between 1957 and 1977, and that bridge date between the old world and the new world that kicked off things was around 63, the Kennedy assassination.
So I found this so interesting because there's a specific date range laid down. And what's even more interesting is this was laid down so long ago. This happens to be, well, I'm part of that generation or the date spread, anyhow, of people born in that era. And really, those are the last of us that lived a significant lifetime before the digital age kicks off. So I just found the whole thing very interesting.
It's more than interesting, and every generation has its challenges and its work cut out for them. And every time there are different, the mission of this world in third dimension consciousness is love and to be uniters of oneness. We talked about the credo of the third dimension, which you can only hear on the Crow 777 show. As we said, is love God with all your heart, serve selflessly, and be all you can be. And that from that, everything else springs out into this life. But we're living in very, very interesting times. And as the Chinese curse was, may you live in interesting times. But when you know your purpose, you know what you want and where you're going, and you're grounded in the moment, you won't have any of the problems. The curse will not be a curse, but a blessing. So what started in World War I, when things really set the stage of the bloodiest century in human history, the 20th century, these things are now coming to a close as old illusions are fading. Everybody is adjusting their eyes to with Buddha vision, and if you're really, really an alchemist and clairvoyant, you will have nirvana vision. So one day soon, everyone will have Buddha vision in living color.
Now, if there are people out there listening and wondering, are they part of this the soul group, what would you say to them for them to know?
Well, you'll know by the years that you were born, and you will also have a longing for knowing that there's something true out there, even though you might not be able to put your finger on it, knowing that you might have a purpose that you're trying to find, and having a love for a past time that was a glorious time when things were on the upswing. So like we talked about England in the 1700s and 1800s, the Georgians and the Victorians, it was on. There was a rising middle class that was growing like nothing else had ever been seen in history before. The golden age of Athens, the golden age under the Roman Republic, the Renaissance. These are certain people among us that had a craving for a different life that they may have actually been part of, and was a good life and a better time. So all of these things put together, it's a culmination. When you have the yearning in your soul, and you may not even know what it's for, but a yearning for something truer, you're part of that.
So Fortunate was one of the earliest things, I think, that you communicated to me. Could you please say the credo one more time so folks can have a chance to learn it?
Love God with all your heart, serve selflessly, and be all you can be. And that is also the alchemical basis, the principle of the Magnus Opus, for those of you who are working on being true alchemists out there. And by the way, before we go a little further, there are very few alchemists in this day and age because, number one, from a previous show, the world has given up on itself. So humanity is not going to fight for itself. The decadence is, meaning hedonism and narcissism, is so strong. The rot is in every it's in every level of society. It's endemic and epidemic, and no society has ever brought itself back from this brink. So we are going down the slope, and the old paradigms are fading, and the new world is coming in. And the world that we will get is the world that we will create for ourselves.
Given your direct royal and alchemical lineage, how does Edgar Cayce's story, demonstrated to be a humble Christian man who was accessing vast hidden knowledge, resonate with traditions from your family's long and storied history?
Well, Saint Germain only moved in the higher circles because there was a message he had for those powers about what the change was and what was coming and how it could have been done peacefully or and what had to be done to make those changes so that it would be a situation where everyone wins and it happens peacefully. And even though Cayce came from what we might say the lowest or most humble origins, both men had one thing in common: humility and just a kindness to help other people. So they both desired to serve, even though they came from opposite ends of the spectrum, and both came with a great mission and great talents. Cayce was a clear channel because he had little. You have to have an ego to survive on Earth. So that's necessary because your ego is discernment. Discernment and judgment are two different things. So if you say judgment in the ways of you're putting a positive or negative on something, which we all do, but discernment, meaning whether it's good or this is very, very hard. So there is a difference between discernment and judgment, where you are discerning to a situation to see what it is and see if it's right for you, which is different from judgment, where you tend to look at a situation and you judge it like you're higher from it, as a judge on the bench looking down on it and, you know, looking down on others when you make the judgment. So when we say our judgments are our own, and once you judge a situation and attach a meaning to it, it becomes yours. So the value you assign to it is the value that becomes yours. And whether you chose discernment or judgment, that you own in the moment until you decide to change it. So like we said, Casey used his psychic powers in a previous life for personal gain and manipulation, but he chose in that incarnation, the one we know him, because we were going into a very, very interesting special situation, a century of so many different events, and where time and events were speeding up and more things were happening in shorter spaces of time. So because of his being a clear channel with little to no ego, and then when he was sleeping, the higher intellects and teachers were able to channel to him, and it was written down while he was sleeping by his secretary, and then it was all transcribed and set about for anyone who would want it. And among all those readings, people are still going through them today. So these were many, many things that were given so that we could all succeed in the earth changes, physical and spiritual, that were coming our way.
I know we have had brief mentions of him before on past shows, but how much of the Edgar Casey readings have you gone through over the years? And has your opinion of his work changed over the years?
There were 14,306 readings, to be exact. I've gone over many, too many to mention, but we're all just scratching the surface with this man. Now, to give you a little bit of the past question, Casey had to sleep for the information to come in. Saint Germain could access these things directly from the ether. So that was the difference between each of these channels that were on Earth at the time. And the readings are very, very strong and very deep. This man was off the scale in his abilities. And my opinion of him has only grown stronger over the years. And he was almost always on the dot. There were times, I guess, that he was a little off. And that might have been because he wasn't fully asleep or his ego was getting in the way. But one of the great things about the great Mr. Casey was he did not seek any of the glory that this world has to offer. This was all being done free of charge for humanity.
Do you see any sort of interesting parallels between the Enlightenment era courts that the original Saint Germain would have navigated and the early 20th century America, where Edgar Casey lived and worked?
Both came at times when such wisdom and help were sorely needed. Both came to show what was coming and to show what could can be with right action, and to give a direction of how these things could be done. Both had people. Casey did suffer a lot in life, so there were people who tried to manipulate both for personal profit. Casey's guardian, who appeared in human form in the turban, was the ascended master El Moria, who kept showing up in human form to assure Casey to keep going, because Casey had been persecuted many times and accused by the three religions of the West, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, as a fraud. And other people had persecuted him because they tried to manipulate him for personal gain and wanted to hire him and give him money, and only if they would work for him. And many times when he turned people like that down, they tried to come after him legally and persecute him through the channels of the law and in other ways of harassment. But both came at times of great transition. They came with a message for all that benefited anyone and everyone willing to listen and value this wisdom.
One of the things that stands out when Jason puts a question together like this, where you're contrasting these two men, is that I was aware Casey really did go through the ringer, and a lot of people did try to do terrible things. But when you read about Saint Germain, and what I've learned through you, most of what you read seems, a lot of it's like myth more than fact, I think. But it seems that Saint Germain was always one step ahead. They describe it as when someone was trying to pull one over on him, he was already aware of it and making that impossible. Do you agree with that assessment?
Because Saint Germain had achieved mastery in this life, and he was able to read the flow of energy and see the flow of energy while awake. He He was able to read thoughts. He was able to delve into the ether while awake, as a true alchemist can. So he was able to look into your soul at the moment and know who you were in that moment and just see you for who you were, not from a point of judgment, but just seeing where you were at spiritually. And then he knew who to work with and who not to work with, who not to throw pearls before swine, who to impart information to that would use it for purposes that were good. There were certain tests that he tested other people with. And the ways of which the original alchemist, the Count Saint Germain, operated are too numerous. But he spoke mystically, he walked mystically, and he lived mystically. And that's what kept everyone on their toes as well as out of kilter.
I don't think many people realize how treacherous the French aristocracy was at that time. And how could a person have done what he did had they not those capabilities? I was just noticing that as Jason put this down, but go ahead, Jason.
Well, just to give you a little insight, the king, Louis XV, was very, very bored. He was born at Versailles. He was tired of the aristocrats. He loved the smaller apartments, which were warmer and more intimate, where he could spend time with the Marquise de Pompadour, that was his mistress. And she was the one who had befriended Saint Germain. And she brought him over to amuse Louis XV because he was so bored. They call it in French the ennui, he bored him to death. People of leisure used to have the ennui. They had great lives of leisure, no work, but they were bored. And that led people to drinking and gambling and sex, and in many cases, you know, drugs, all of them. So when he met Saint Germain and they became friends, they actually formed an alchemical laboratory together at the king's expense. And the king and Saint Germain spent a lot of time together. He regaled them with stories, and he addressed the king in the familiar version, the tu version in French, instead of vous. He did not call him votre majesté. He spoke to him as if he were an equal and an intimate, which is unheard of at that time. And also he removed the flaw from the king's diamond. So he brought the diamond back a month later, and the big white diamond had no flaw in it, just to prove that he could do these things. So many of the miracles or alchemical achievements were meant to show, get their attention, and to show that he knew what he was saying. But alas, that we know that all or most of what he said was unheeded, because the revolution unfortunately did happen, which he was trying to prevent.
Before we do the next question, for those who read on Saint Germain, a lot of it is myth and blown up out of proportion and echoed, but the gem story about the diamond and a couple others, which Fortune has told me about, do show up in many of the accounts. Anyhow, go ahead, Jason.
Edgar Cayce emphasized that his abilities came through service and humility, as opposed to any sort of ego about having powers beyond most mortal men. Would you say that this aligns, at least to some degree, with the alchemical principles of inner purification that you've spoken about before?
Blessed are the pure of heart, for they will see God. A real alchemist is someone who... Purity of heart in this world, or saint, means that you think of others more than you think of yourself. So if you are the type of person that lives your life in human service, divine service, and you think of others more than yourself, that is purity of heart, as the angels see it. And angel, in the angelic definition from the higher realms, is anyone who chooses to be good and do good. So the angels are yes men. They have no free will. And just as we're speaking, any of these stories for the current world that's listening, and this is translated through your teacher here from Source, the stories of devils and cosmic Satans and fallen angels are allegory, parable, metaphor, and stories. There is no fallen in the universe. There is only the arisen. An angel cannot fall from grace because it has no free will. Angels are transdimensional. They can travel all dimensions. They are protectors of oneness. One more thing. Take a look at a character called Dr. Fritz in Brazil. And he was someone who was a doctor in a past life and did not fulfill his mission. And when he left this world, he agreed to come into a body and work on people in Brazil. So there's a man in Brazil who goes into trance, and Dr. Fritz's spirit comes in and sometimes works for 12 or 16 or 18 hours, and he operates on people with a dirty scalpel. They inject iodine, and the man who is inhabiting Dr. Fritz's body, when he works with the scalpel or when he touches the iodine, people are cured and no one gets sick. So Dr. Fritz is a very, very talented spirit in agreement with the people that are lending the body for the short time when he can come in and operate on people. I think that goes on once a month. So Edgar Cayce made the same agreement where he would sleep and he would allow his consciousness to open to the higher consciousness so that he could bring in all of these beautiful that is the true diamond, wisdom. Wisdom is the greatest stone. Wisdom is the philosopher's stone. So when you have divine wisdom, even if you can produce the red diamond, which is a sign of the alchemist, wisdom is the true philosopher's stone. And we mean divine wisdom. So that would be divine consciousness and divine knowing in human form.
So, Jason, the next one, I think Fortune just kind of answered part of it, but go ahead.
Can you describe how Edgar Cayce entered his distinctive trance state? And what do you understand about the process that would include things like accessing the Akashic records and soul travel and any other mechanisms that might need to be mentioned?
The Akashic records are the Universal Hall of Records or the Universal Hall of Knowledge. Your Akashic records are in your eighth chakra, which is the Merkaba above your crown, and that's a non-earthly chakra. So when he lied down in agreement to start going to sleep, the higher realms and consciousness entered him so that he was able to fall asleep and start translating and giving the information from what he called source or the higher dimensions. So he was anchored in the moment. Cayce was not only a very, very kind soul, but he was anchored in the moment, and he had spiritual gifts where he could actually see auras. So one day he was in a building in Chicago, and the elevator opened, and nobody in the elevator had an aura on them. And he got scared and didn't go into the elevator because he knew something was wrong. And that elevator, a few seconds later, the cable snapped and went down like a rocket about 20 or 30 stories, and everybody in the elevator was killed. So he just had the agreement. And I would actually say it looks like that he was joyful to lie down and go to sleep and do these things, that he looked at it with joy and as great blessing that he could do these things.
Did he sleep normally at night as well, and he was just able to get himself to fall asleep when he needed to do these things?
Well, the sleep was more of a trance session, so it was a little different than the average sleep, and I would say, yes, he did sleep. And just to let you know, he didn't live a very, very long, inordinately long life. So many people, like I said earlier, the stigmatists, they don't live very long, those who have the true stigmata. So I don't remember exactly what age Cayce passed away with, but he did not live an inordinately long life. So in many ways, when you're called in that way to do a lot of the spiritual work that's very intense, a great many oftentimes you're not in our realm for very long.
He was born in 1877 and passed away in 1945.
So when people go to sleep, is it similar? They're going to a non-physical realm, more of a spiritual realm. Is that just the same thing Casey's doing here?
Well, it depends how deep your consciousness is, how spiritual you are. And when we go to sleep, our souls all travel, and we all do different things that are spiritual when we are asleep, because our ego is asleep. So your true consciousness and your true soul is awakened while you sleep. So there are many, many things that happen to us while we sleep. We are all connected. We are all part of the greater whole. And when Casey did his readings, which we said number almost 15,000, it was the universe showing us that anything is possible. And there is just so much to say about this. We could talk about each of these little points for hours upon hours, but we are constrained by time.
Many of his physical readings, said to be over 9,000, were said to be done remotely and for people he never actually met. From an alchemical and energetic perspective, how was he able to diagnose conditions and prescribe remedies that seemed to be quite accurate under such conditions?
They were overwhelmingly accurate. As I just said in the last question, we're all connected. We're all part of the greater whole. So we're all part of the one. So it is possible to access anything at any time. Even here in third dimension consciousness, where the illusion of time and space give us the illusion of separation, which we are not. So Casey knew, which he talks about in his readings, that heaven and earth are one and the same, that there's really no difference. If you want to say, then why is there third, fourth, fifth, sixth dimension? It is, I guess, a little bit of an oxymoron or a contradiction, but it's true. So when we talk about Buddhist koans, which are wisdom riddles, and they make absolutely no sense, but it's the truth. So in this process, yes, heaven and earth are one and the same. And just to let you know, from the Casey readings, the reason why things seem so hard and difficult here is because we're in one of the planets or planes or realms or spheres in the universe where matter is densest. So just remember that the reason why things seem as difficult as they are, because you are in one of the places in all of the universe where matter is densest.
Edgar Casey often lost his voice as a young man and is said to have regained it through trance. What do you think this early healing episode could tell us about the relationship between voice, truth, and spiritual power?
Well, spirit put to voice, or truth, the voice should always be used as a reflection of spirit and truth. And he probably lost his voice because of the strictness of his father. So people were afraid. People are often afraid to speak. And as you know, from our childhoods, depending on who our parents are, we're often being told to be quiet. What you have to say isn't important here. And he also grew up in a time when the child was to be seen but not heard. But through trance and regaining his voice, that was one of the times when the angels and the masters were attuning his psyche, his spirit, to regain his voice, to use it in a different way. So there you go. Remember, speak mystically and walk like an Egyptian.
Edgar Casey insisted that these abilities were not unique to him, which is similar to things that we have heard you say. What practices, such as meditation, prayer, or inner discipline, did he recommend, and how might they align with the Twin Hearts meditation that you are very fond of, or any other alchemical work that might be accessible today?
We live in a world of alchemy, infinity, and miracles, which is my maxim and my slogan. So remember that. Heard only here on the Crow 777 show. But these are open to anyone who wants them. And remember the words of Master Jesus, greater than I shall you do. So better than the Twin Hearts meditation are the ones that we have online that will be posted again on the chakra meditations, the divine youth meditation, eternal life, the Christ meditation, Kundalini meditation, which will, the links will be posted for them on the various, and they're all free. So you can listen to them every day for free and cultivate your own psyche, your own clairvoyance and service, wisdom, and remember, walk your talk in daily life. It means you have to put your money where your mouth is. So when the universe not only sees that you have faith, but it's coupled with good works, and you actually are showing willingness to do what you believe in, that's when the miracles kick in, because the universe responds to faith. It doesn't respond to need. It responds to faith.
Fortune, do you feel like a person who wants to make it a life mission to be good when they're young, is that something that is announced to the universe, or is that something that the universe recognizes with no label?
It can be both. It can be both, or it can be either. You know, the way we're recognized is by our spirit. So the amount, you were recognized by the amount of love and kindness we have in our heart. The universe itself was created on love and friendship. So love and friendship are basically one and the same. So remember, when we say from previous programs, the only transportation in the universe is a leap of faith. And when this teacher who is broadcasting to you now was in some times where he was feeling tired, he said to the universe, "Must I do everything on a wing and a prayer?" And the angels laughed and said, "Is there any other way?"
Reincarnation and karma are central to the life readings. How does Edgar Cayce's presentation of these concepts compare to classical, alchemical, and esoteric views of soul evolution?
Well, the journey is eternal and infinite, and it's the same as all of the old mystery traditions. And by the way, ancient Judaism also believes in reincarnation because they had sprung. Remember, the Jews were in Egypt and the Jews were the Hyksos people. So they had sprung from earlier religions that had believed in reincarnation. So it's the same, but Cayce's readings are much deeper and more detailed as they came from the higher dimensions. And they came at a time when the world would be ready for these things. As we said, old paradigms would be fading and disappearing. So the world was ready when Cayce came to give these things, which is why he was allowed to do these things and give this information. As we talked about before, this is Saint Germain speaking, the mystery schools don't offer that much, and they're closed societies. So a true teacher, a real guru that really knows, if you came to him asking, he would have to answer you and tell you. A true guru does not have a closed club. So you'd be better off finding a real teacher in this age or a real alchemist and learn. And, you know, you don't need the Rosicrucians, the mystery schools, and a lot of these, their organizations, their clubs, and a lot of the information that they have is also steeped in dogma and erroneous. So Cayce was giving it to us without the fanfare. He was giving it to us straight. And that's why a lot of the religions didn't like it, because it contradicted the traditions that they had built up in their own religions. And before we go any further, one of the things that Cayce had pointed out, what negates a karmic debt is grace. And the definition of grace, as we talked about, was suffering is optional. Karma means lessons / unfinished business. Lessons can be learned in one way, two ways, joy or suffering. The choice is yours. When you choose to learn your lessons in joy, that means that you learn the lessons, you know them consciously, you take them into your heart, and you live that with wisdom. That is what negates the karma instantly, where you don't have to pay back the karmic debt through suffering. So Cayce had talked about that in one of his readings.
Let me zero in on the word karma. I think in the modern era, most people that want to go learn something about karma, that look for books to read, they're probably going to end up with a Buddhist text. It was the first place that I ever read supposed descriptions of what karma is, how it works, and so on. And it was totally an Eastern Buddhist representation. In your view, and you kind of partially defined it, how would you define karma for people who just have baggage? You know, it's a word that gets used, or they have obscure ideas. How would you put it forward actually?
Lessons. And lessons are to be learned in joy or pain. And suffering is optional. The moment is all positive, if only we allow it to be. A little bit of a warning here. One of the curses of planet Earth, remember we say plane and planet. So little plane, planet means little plane. So one of the curses of the great realm that we live in, and there is no original curse on this sphere, this realm, this dimension of ours. There is only original blessing, just as there is no fallen, only the arisen. We curse ourselves, and one of the ways we do it, and one of the great curses of our world, is that the majority of people push away those who want to be good to them. They push away those who are the best thing for them and want to treat them nicely, and they gravitate towards the people who will abuse them.
Edgar Cayce described the long-lost continent of Atlantis in great detail, which included its technology, crystal use, moral decline, and eventual destruction. What is your perspective on Atlantis as a physical reality versus just a mythological story or archetype?
It was greatly physical. The Lemurians, who predated them, did not have technology. They were more of a spiritual people. The Atlanteans started out spiritually, but they developed technology and weapons. And there were long periods where things went very, very well, but eventually they started getting involved and thinking of themselves as sort of gods or mini gods, and that they could manipulate nature and creation. And that is where each generation fell further and further. They created chimeras, combinations of man and animal and different kinds of animals. We talked about this before, that Bigfoot is a remnant, and they were used to do the work for that society. And when Atlantis toppled, they were left on their own. And there are a few other kinds of creatures or animals that did survive that are still roaming, but not many. And towards the end, they had just fallen so low that they forgot their purpose, and they forgot that they were one with the greater whole. And they thought that they could actually control nature and become gods themselves. And the use of the crystal at the end was the third and final destruction of Atlantis. And that crystal is still working. It's what creates the time-space anomaly in the Bermuda Triangle, but it's not attuned. And when Christopher Columbus sailed through the Caribbean, he talked about seeing a great light at night under the water. He was seeing the crystal, and a little bit of a warning to the world right now, in this time that we are living in, where events are speeding up, and we don't have the spiritual grounding, the ironclad spiritual grounding that we did in previous generations. We're about to make the same mistake again that the Atlanteans made, that destroyed their world.
Do you feel like the destruction of Atlantis was done by an elite top tier that was acting against the interests of most?
They were playing with things they didn't understand. They thought they did. The Atlantean civilization was created on different ways and different paradigms than we were. They were longer lived. Their DNA was different than ours. The society was based on many, many different things. They had free energy, which was open to all. And they were many, many ways different than we are. That's why, like it says in the book of Genesis, that the flood, after the flood, people only got 120 years, because pre-flood they were the Atlanteans, and they had about 1,000 years. Some of them lived quite a bit longer because they were in the, they were either very spiritually attuned, as one of the priestesses was, who lived 5,000 years, or they went into the Temple Beautiful, which was a vibratory temple, and that was a rejuvenative temple that healed people and that could do age reversal and life extension.
Edgar Cayce also spoke of Atlantean survivors who went on to influence ancient Egypt, which included the Hall of Records. How credible do these accounts seem to you from your historical and esoteric vantage point?
There were 3 halls of records, one in Bimini, which is still there, one in the Yucatan, and one in Egypt, that were to, because the people that had left Atlantis were the children of the Law of One, and they knew that the end was near. They had lost the war between good and evil, their battle of Armageddon, and they knew that their home country and those who were controlling it would eventually destroy themselves. So they set out to other places to create the halls of records where people would eventually be able to access their knowledge and use it for the betterment of their future civilizations. So Bimini, Egypt, and the Yucatan, and somewhere near the coast of Cuba. And yes, your government does know that it's there. They know that there is one of the ancient cities of Atlantis is down there. They are trying to find the crystal, but they have not found it yet. The Iroquois Indians are descendants of the Atlanteans. And just to let you know, there are to this day some outposts of the Atlantean civilization that still and do exist, and I'm not telling you where in our world they are. When Ezekiel saw the chariot, he was seeing an Atlantean flying machine, and Edgar Cayce did this in one of his readings. He said, now this is 10,000 years, basically, after the sinking of Atlantis. So there were colonies that did leave and did hold on to their technology. So 10,000 years later, Ezekiel was speaking to somebody in what he called a flying chariot, which was one of the Atlantean flying machines. And they still do exist, and they are out-of-the-way colonies. They do not want anything to do with us. And over the years, some people and some military operations in our world have come in contact with them.
Jason and I did an interview way, way back with a guy who spoke Basque and was Basque. And if I remember correctly, might have been off the air. We asked them what their culture says they came from. They have all these unique things, like a language that doesn't fit any of the groupings, that languages they grouped into. But do you remember, Jason? He said that their folk tradition was that they came from Atlantis. When mm-hmm. Atlantis sunk, they came ashore, and they did used to be a seafaring people a lot. I guess that's changed. And the other one was the Berbers made a claim that they had come from the remains of Atlantis.
There were people that did survive. The Guanches on, I think it's the Canary Islands,
yep.
When they were first discovered by modern man, the Indians that lived on that island said, we didn't know that anyone else survived the cataclysm. But they were exterminated by the Spanish. So they were descendants. And yes, there were various outposts. But what I'm talking about is those were the average people that were either on ships or had trading colonies that survived, and they lost the technology. There are still places and very, very out-of-the-way places in our world, which has more land and is bigger than they've told you, where these colonies with very high technology do exist.
All right, I think that's going to bring us to the top of the hour for hour one.
We didn't do too bad. We got a few covered there. Fortune, do you want to please tell folks one more time the announcement you made in the opening?
We still are accepting and have much room for anyone who would like to come to London on the 22nd of August from 1 to 3 p.m. for the Chakra Healing Seminar, New Paradigm for a New World, and December 12th, which is Saturday, from 1 to 3, also in London, Alchemy for Prosperity and Clairvoyance in the New World.
As always, we will make this information available in the description. Also, if need be, you can use the contact at the footer of any page to contact us and ask questions. And Jason, do you have anything before we break for hour one?
When we get back for hour two, we're going to pick up with earth changes that Casey spoke about quite often. Warnings for places like California, New York, Japan, and Europe.
All right. This brings hour one to a close. We're going to take a short break, come back for hour two. Hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full episode and they get access to all the forums, comments sections, the two-hour film called Shoot the Moon with 10 awards in the world. They get exclusive access to my current solar work. And we'll be back shortly with hour two. I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. And I hope to see you logged in as a member for the second hour. There it is, man. Cheers.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.